You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. Today, we are going to explore extracting equity from your primary residence to use that equity to go out there and buy rental properties and then do some modeling to help it reach your end retirement goal for generating cash flow from rental properties. So this is our fourth episode in our investment property analysis course series. So if you've not listened to the previous three, especially the one previous to this one, the one that was titled Return on Equity, I highly recommend you listen to that one first, because a lot of what we're talking about today, those concepts are built upon that previous episode of Return on Equity. So a little more bit of a preview here. The numbers we're talking about today is something that a lot of Denver homeowners can probably relate to. If you've bought your home the last, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, you're sitting on some equity. And oftentimes that equity can be a six-figure amount. So as we discussed in the last episode, there is an opportunity cost to that equity, not only in your rental properties, but also your primary residence. So depending on where you're at in your accumulation phase or debt pay down phase of your real estate investing strategy, it may or may not make sense to pull that equity out to go out there and buy some more rental properties with it. So we're going to explore that plus a lot more today. And as a reminder, again, this is the fourth episode in the series. And if you want to see the charts and graphs, the numbers I'm mentioning here, go to the link in the show notes and that'll take you to the blog post. And all the numbers are written out there. Plus, there are some graphs that I will be mentioning today. There's about 5 or 6 graphs I'll be going through. So I'll do my best to describe those. But if you want to go see them, click the links in the show notes, go there, or go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com. Go to courses and click on the investment property analysis course. And then that'll take you to the blog post so you can see those as well. And of course, if you ever get lost or confused while going through stuff, reach out to me. I'm always happy to help out with getting you the right information or even run some scenarios. All right, so diving into the episode today, as you guys know by now, my preference is to always use real numbers, real properties, and real scenarios, because that's what I like to learn. So I think most people are like that as well. And frankly, it just gives us the most accurate picture as possible to know what's going on. So this episode, the next one, is actually based on a real estate financial plan that I built for a couple of clients to help model their retirement goals based off of equity, some cash they have, and their current savings rate to determine their rent, to help them build a rental portfolio for retirement reasons. Now, for privacy reasons, you know, no personal information is removed, but all these are just real numbers and real things that I've ran and I've discussed with my clients. So we're going to talk about the client's goals and profiles, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys can relate out there. Then we'll talk about how I gathered the information to map out their long-term goals and start crunching the numbers. Then I'll go through the three main different options that they have, really anyone has, for pulling the equity for either primary residence, or three options with their primary residence, I should say. And then the last part of this is I've used the real estate financial planning software to build 4 scenarios. And I'm running 2 scenarios of achieving goals across $5,000 a month and $10,000 a month in real estate retirement income. All right, so jumping into it, let's talk about what the profile of the client is. So their medium-term goal is to generate $5,000 a month from real estate, because that'll allow one spouse to retire from the job. And their long-term goal is about $10,000 a month of paid-off properties for their longer-term retirement. And this is in addition to their other retirement funds, their 401k, Social Security, all the other stuff. So we're really focusing on just that real estate slice of the pie. So they bought their primary residence in 2016, and they currently have a 15-year mortgage on there with about $3,100 a month in principal and interest monthly payment. The remaining loan balance is just over $372,000. And as a note here, I'm going through a lot of numbers here. I'm going to round the numbers to the closest 1,000, and sometimes I might round a little bit differently as I reread the numbers. But just to understand, follow along, and I'll definitely highlight the important numbers just so you guys can get the gist of it, because getting down to the penny is not that important. So $3,100 a month is your current payment. Their loan balance is about $372,000. Based on a CMA, a comparative market analysis that we ran, their current home value is about $645,000. And then I went out and asked a property manager. I actually asked Anne-Marie Sunday of Legacy Property Management. She's been on a few podcasts with us in the past. I said, hey, you know, run this property, give me a rental estimate. And what she said, and I'm just reading from her email here, I always like to go higher, and as such, I would love to try to get $3,195, and we can, but for budgeting purposes and time of year, maybe we plan for $2,800 to $3,000, I think, to be more conservative. Again, it's always useful to go visit the home, get a better feel, but those are numbers based on what she can see from reading the property. So for my modeling, I'm keeping it simple. I'm going to assume $3,000 a month just to make numbers a little bit more simple. So a little more about the client profile here. You know, it's a married couple. They have two young children. And the children recently got accepted into the desired elementary school. And then, you know, they want to stay within the current school district because, you know, taking the real estate investing side out of it, their personal side, their personal goals and requirements, they got into a great school district or a great elementary school, and they want to stay on that track and keep their kids in there. So since we're talking primary residence, these are some of the facts that we have to start putting into here and start weighing what's the best option, and it's not just numbers and spreadsheets. So currently both spouses work. And as I said earlier, that $5,000 a month goal to help one do an early retirement. So in addition to their primary residence, they have a cash flowing condo that they purchased in 2018 here in Denver. And the monthly savings rate from their job income, so non-rental cash flow income, is about $1,000 a month. And out of all the capital they have, they already have saved, they've got about $55,000 of capital earmarked for real estate investing. All right, so looking at these numbers, very high level, here are some initial thoughts of mine, is that they're sitting on a lot of equity. They have a lot of real estate piggy bank. So about $273,000. So I'm just subtracting the, I think we said the property was worth about $645. I subtracted the loan balance about $373, and that gives us about $273 of equity. So everyone say, thank you, Denver, for the gift of equity, because I know they are not the only people to experience that. So a couple other details about them. House hacking, where they're going to have roommates or tenants help reduce their living cost, is out of the question since they have a family and they don't want, you know, they want to just keep the home just for themselves and their family, which I completely understand. And then looking at nomading, which is where they can move around a couple of times into owner-occupant properties, not have roommates and tenants, but then move out after a couple of years and then turn that property into a rental. It isn't ideal since they are raising a family and they do want to stay in their current school district, but they are happy to move once or twice, as long as they can stay within the same school district, if it's going to significantly move the needle on achieving their goals. Okay, so the very first option here that I always like to look at when we're analyzing someone's primary residence and then putting in terms of what we can do with that in terms of building a rental property. Should they simply move out of their primary residence, buy a new one, and convert it to a rental property? So kind of depends on who you talk to about this, but I don't need to spend very long. Great, the house is worth $645,000 and it rents for $3,000 a month. That's not a great rental property. We have yet to buy any rental properties above $600,000 with an estimated rent of $3,000. You're just a very poor rental property. I haven't run the numbers, but it's probably a 4-cap-ish or so rental property if you were to buy it. So again, from a very high level overview, $645,000 to bring in $3,000 a month in rent, or we're buying these 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom condos in Aurora for $200,000, so a third of the price, but they're renting about $1,800, $1,850 a month. So for about a third of the price, we're getting about 2/3 of the rent. So it's a much better rent-to-price ratio or a higher cap rate. So some people might say, hey, that makes sense to go out there and keep the property and turn it to rental since you have, you know, a smaller loan balance on there. but it really depends on what the person's goals are. And I know these clients, they're in the accumulation phase of the real estate investing strategy. So they need to accumulate more properties and not just start paying things off. So from a very high level overview, hey, the property they have, if it made sense as an okay rental, a great rental, I'd say, hey, keep it. You know, if this was a $400,000 property that rented for $22, $23 a month, hey, might make sense to keep because, yeah, while it's not the best rental, it's a pretty good rental they have. But these numbers are just too high in my mind. So right off the bat, I don't think this is a great option for them. So I did not recommend it, but we did discuss it. Option two is to stay in their primary residence and then pull out equity to buy more rental properties. Now, in the previous episode, we talked a lot about this, running some cash out refinance scenarios. So conceptually, it's going to be the same, but since it's the primary residence, they definitely can get some better terms on there and have a few different options. So what we did here, again, we always like to get the most accurate numbers as possible, and this is where I always lean on other people and other professionals. Other professionals. Man, I'm having a hard time talking today. So the loan officer that did their rental property on their condo last year is Lonnie Glessner. He's a senior loan officer at Draper and Kramer Mortgage. So we reached out to Lonnie and asked him to run some numbers on their current primary based off of the current loan balance, the current value that we estimated. And he sent us back a great email that I'm going to just summarize here. Since this is a primary residence, they can actually go above a 75% loan to value ratio, but then it becomes a high balance loan to do an 80%. And I don't quite know all the details of that, but basically once you get above that 75% loan to value ratio, you do become a higher risk to the lender because there's less equity in the property. So he's assuming an appraised value of $645,000. And these are all 30-year fixed rate options. And at the time of this recording, these were about probably 6 weeks ago. Not that interest rates have changed very much, but right now we are in December of 2019 is where I'm reading these numbers. And these are, I think, from September, October this year. But again, in this time frame, rates have not changed much. So if he did the 80% loan to value or high balance loan, get a total loan balance about $516,000, and that would then pay off the current balance, the current loan of $373,000, I think we said, and then he had the difference left over for cash. So it'd be a rate of 4.375% with a P&I payment, so just principal and interest. When we look at refinancing, we generally don't look at taxes and insurance because those are the same regardless of your mortgage options. Because those are operating expenses, not lending or not mortgage cost. So a 4.375% rate with a P&I payment of $2,576. So just under $2,600. So they could also buy a point, which is 1% of the loan balance. So about, what, $5,000? And they could lower their rate from 4.375 to 3.875. So that's a half a point there. So that would drop their payment about $150 a month from $2,576 to $2,426. So going with now looking at the second option on here, it's a 75% loan to value, which is the more normal one. And since it's less risky, it's on a high balance loan. So you'll get more favorable terms and a better rate because it's less risky to the lender and the person that holds the note at the end of the day. So 75% of that $645 purchase price would be a total loan value of about $484,000. And that would give him a rate of 3.875% with a P&I payment of $2,275. Or if they pay part of a point fee of about $875, it'll reduce their interest rate to 3.625%. And their payments would drop to $2,206. So that's about $70 less a month for about $900 in fees to buy the point down. So $70 into $900, that's not very much. I can't do the math in my head. But what, maybe that's just a year, year and a half. So in my mind, that makes sense to do that because great, if I can spend $900, I get that payback in 1 to 2 years. That's a win. So again, this is why you need to run these numbers and talk with it. Talk with your mortgage lender and also talk with your agent or me. So keep in mind that their current P&I payment is $3,100. So all these options are lower. But we see a lower price because we're going from a 15-year amortization to a 30-year amortization. So this is one of the trade-offs we've been talking about is rather than prepaying the primary residence quicker, should we draw it out and put more cash towards buying rental properties, which is what I'm a fan of doing, generally speaking. So another option is looking at a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. And they currently had the one on their home, and they had about $155,000. The rate is prime plus 1%. So as of September, that would put their rate right around 5.25%. So they can, that is much more easier to pull the money out of, but they can pull less money and they have to pay it back quicker. So neither me nor Lonnie, the lender, was a fan of the HELOC, nor were we a fan of the 80% loan to value. And kind of just in my mind, the sweet spot is that 75% LTV. You buy the rate down, and then that gives you a lower fixed monthly payment. And so that's what we want to go towards. All right, so going through my notes here. Okay, so why go from a 15-year to 30-year amortization or do that versus a HELOC? Well, it's because debt is really cheap right now. If we're getting rates sub 4%, let's just say 4% for simplicity, I think it makes sense to finance it. You heard in episode one, the type of returns on investment we're getting and the returns on equity. Nothing was ever below 4%. I mean, a lot of times your return on debt pay down or your depreciation tax benefits were right around 4%. So is it better to prepay something that costs you 4% or to use the money to get you something that can get you a 15 to 30% return? Well, if you plug into a spreadsheet with taking other variables into consideration, you should always take that arbitrage and go get the higher interest rate because you'll make more money on your money by investing in a higher rate than prepaying interest. Now, if the rates were at 12 or 15% like they were in the 1980s, different story. But interest rates are really low right now, so money is cheap. So my vote is to finance it. All right. So assuming the 75% loan to value, since that is the kind of the sweet spot in my mind, that would give them a total cash of about $166,500. So that's $112,000 from their refinance and paying off their current loan balance, plus the $55,000 from the capital they already have saved up. So about $166,000. And then that will give them a total cash flow for real estate investing of about $1,900 a month. And let me explain this. So we've already got that $1,000 a month that they can save from their job income. That's just their personal savings rate that they can save and put towards buying more real estate. Well, if their current, and now we're at that other $900, if their current mortgage on 15-year mortgage is $3,100, subtract $3,100 or subtract the new payment of $2,206 from $3,100 and gives you about a $900 difference. And so one of the keys here is actually having the discipline and the ability to track, hey, we are saving this money. Let's make sure we're utilizing this money and it just doesn't disappear into our checking account and get spent on, you know, whatever. You guys know how it is. A lot of times if you save money, if you don't specifically track that money, it just kind of goes in your checking account and just disappears into the normal day-to-day, week-to-week living expenses, or at least it does for me. So, but looking at this, since they are very detailed, they want to hit these goals, they can take that difference and put it towards their increased real estate savings rate. So about $1,900 a month in savings. Okay, so that was option two, to do a cash out refinance. Option three is to sell their primary residence, buy a new one, and then use the leftover the proceeds to buy more rentals. So I'm a big fan of cash out refinances, but you're generally limited to 75%, you know, for an investment property or 80% for primary. And as far as all the numbers I've seen, it's never made sense to go above 75% on the primary just because rates and terms are so much better on that 75% loan versus the 80% loan to value loan. So great, you can pull out 75%, but you're leaving 25% of equity in the property. It's not good or bad. I'm just stating a fact here. Now, in many cases, selling the property, at least here in the Denver market, since we have, you know, properties that are in the multiple six-figure range, Selling a property will generally let you get more equity from your house, even when you take in selling cost consideration. Because as I said before, and everyone knows, transacting real estate is not a cheap thing to do. There's lots of fees, there's cost, and there's money involved. So rough numbers here. If we did a $645,000 sales price, and that's what it got sold for, and assuming about 6% in sales costs between fees and realtor commissions, all that stuff, that's about $39,000. Subtract the current loan payoff, about $373,000. That leaves them with $234,000 and change in cash proceeds. Well, $234,000 in cash proceeds is more than double the $111,000 from their 75% refinance. But a couple things to consider here is that they still need a place to live and they have to move. So there's a lot of hassle with that and there's other costs associated with moving. So I'm not factoring a moving cost or the hassle of moving because that's very hard to quantify in a spreadsheet. Now, on the flip side here, doing the cash out refinance is a tax-free event. You don't get taxed on refinances on properties. And since this has been their primary residence in the last two out of the last 5 years, they should get the capital gains exclusion from the IRS, meaning they owe no taxes on that money. And of course, they and you and everyone should always check with their CPA because I am not one, but we can assume for modeling that that's going to be tax-free. And the 6% selling cost might be a little bit higher, but I'm actually pretty confident in that percentage point because they bought the property from a flipper, so it was a good rehab property. They've done some upgrades. They've been very good about maintaining it, so there should be very, very few inspection items on there or very few seller concessions they have to give once the property is under contract. Okay, so going on to kind of the next puzzle to or next piece of this puzzle is that, great, they sold the property. They got $234,000 in cash now, but they need a place to live. So I said, hey, you know, this is going to be a primary residence. You guys have to be in the school district. You need to find me, look at properties on the MLS and find some that looks like, hey, this would probably look good, just so we have a general price point and layout so we can do some basic modeling. So they sent over a 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom house that was on the market for about $525,000. So first thing is, great, that is a less expensive property than the one they're selling, which is, you know, hey, if you can do that, that's always a great move because that helps keep the payment lower. So since I'm a fan of leverage and they want to accumulate right now, we're going to keep things simple and say they're going to put the least amount of money down this property, which should be a 5% down conventional loan. So 5% of 525 is $26,250 plus, let's say, about $5,000 in closing cost. And it might be a little bit more, a little bit less, but it gives us an idea of some ballpark. So about $32,000 in cost for buying the new primary residence. So if they get a new loan, a new 30-year loan, loan value, it'll be 3.75% and should be about $2,300 a month in their P&I payment. And again, I did not calculate taxes and interest. I'm sorry, taxes and insurance, because it should be pretty similar to the property they just sold. And we're trying to kind of keep those operating expenses separate. They're already paying for that separately outside of what we're talking about. So now we are trying to keep things apples to apples. Okay, so that new payment of $2,300 would be less than their current payment of $3,100. So now we have another spread there that they can take that money and save. So their total cash, their total monthly savings rate for investing will be about $1,800 from this model. $800 from the difference in monthly mortgage payments, plus their $1,000 in the current monthly savings rate. Their total cash for investing will be about $258,000. So what I did here is I took that $234,000 from the sale of their property, added in the $55,000 from their capital for buying more property, and then subtracted about $32,000 out to come with, you know, to buy the new home, to buy the new primary, and all about $258,000 to save. All right, so I threw a lot of numbers at you there, so hopefully you're able to kind of keep track with it. but I'm just going to recap the very big numbers so we can, because we're going to use this going forward now as we start doing some modeling with the real estate financial planning software. So doing the 75% loan to value refinance cost or option, they're starting cash about $166, and their monthly savings rate would be about $1,900 a month. If they sell it, their starting cash is about $258,000, and their monthly savings rate is about $1,800 a month. So about $100 a month in the savings rate, but about $90,000 difference between the refinance and the selling results as far as cash in the bank. Now, as I'm running this model, and if you guys have seen the real estate financial planning software, or if you've seen it, you know it's very complex and it's a beast that can do some amazing modeling. If you have not, I would definitely recommend you go check out the three-part series we did on how to build a 10-property rental portfolio that we did with the creator James Orr about a year ago. And I'll put a link in the show notes here too, because it really goes through screen by screen of how to plug in the data. And I think it's very impressive to watch to see how everything puts in there. So you have to put in a lot of assumptions, a lot of variables. So I built out the model for all of this. I'm not going to go in all the details of it just because I want to keep focused on the numbers here. So here are the assumptions I used. They take all this cash and they have to put it somewhere. So I like to be safe and conservative with my cash for investing. So I'm assuming that they'll put it in something similar to like an Ally bank or an Ally savings account, which is what I use. And if I recall, they use a different bank, but a similar online account where they get right around 2% in interest. So currently, Ally is paying 1.9% in interest. So that way they're earning a couple dollars while they're buying, while they're saving up money and buying rental properties. So I had to plug in a sample property for things that we could purchase. So I plugged in just kind of a very bread and butter property that we buy all the time and talk about it. About the $200,000 condo in Aurora, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 25% down payment, $5,000 in closing cost, $2,500 in rent-ready cost, rents $1,800 a month, 30-year mortgage at 4.875%, appreciation rate at 4%, rent appreciation at 3%, and all the other normal assumptions we put in there. Vacancy of 5%, property management, I put 10% in there, which I think is a little bit high for these condos. Repairs and maintenance of 5%, HOA. And so I try to keep my assumptions more towards 3%, which is the inflation rate, because all we're trying to do here is hopefully stay with inflation or beat it. I think there's a good chance we will outpace inflation in rent and appreciation here in Denver next 30 years. But if we can model it at inflation or close to it, I think that's, if the numbers look good that way, and we have a good chance of seeing higher rates of growth, great. It just helps us get our goals faster. So 4% appreciation, 3% rent growth, and 3% expense growth. Okay, so I took all this data, spent a couple hours plugging into the real estate financial planning software, built it all out. Now I'm going to run you through four scenarios. And actually, before I dive into the specifics of the scenarios, I'll go and jump into here as well. So the four scenarios I built, it's two similar concepts, but one is going towards that $5,000 a month goal, and one is going towards that $10,000 a month goal, and then two different scenarios on there to get to that goal. So I probably just lost you there, so let me read the names of these scenarios. So scenario one is to refinance the primary residence, then go purchase 5 rental properties. Scenario two is sell your primary, move once. They're not nomading, they're just moving once to buy a new primary, then buy 5 rentals. Scenario three is refinance your primary and buy 10 rentals, or sell your primary, move once, and buy 10 rentals. So really we're comparing the refinance option versus sell option and then buying 5 or 10 rental properties with each scenario out there. So the way the modeling works is each scenario, the way the logic works in the software, the way I program the rules in there, is that each scenario will run to get by those 5 or 10 properties until it achieves that goal. And it's going to do that by taking the initial cash from the sale of the refinance, plus the personal monthly savings rates, plus the rental property cash flow. It puts it all into one bank account, And then it'll buy as many of those properties as quickly as possible while never letting the account's balance drop below $25,000. So I put $25,000 in there to kind of keep the basic reserve account in there. So, you know, we don't want to get down to $2 and a speed bump and also we lose through rental properties. So I kept $25,000 in there as a buffer. So the scenario will take all the starting out cash, the savings rate cash, the rental cash, and say, great, we got this amount of money. We can go out there and buy three rentals now or two rentals now. Or as we save every month, we build up the bank account enough to buy the next rental property. And of course, every month as we're going forward, the inflation is kicking in. So it's assuming expenses are going up, rents are going up, prices are going up. All those variables we put in there, it's going to go up. So that way, everything is staying a pretty good apples to apples comparison. And then the rule, like the logic rule I programmed in there, is that once the scenario has achieved the goal of buying 5 or 10 rental properties, a new rule kicks in that stops buying property and then takes all the property cash flow from the rental cash flow and the monthly savings rate and then starts going towards debt pay down in the snowball method. So rather than it being save, buy, now it's like, great, we've met our goal. Now we're done with the accumulation phase of our investing. And now we're going to be in the debt pay down of our investing so we can maximize cash flow to help us retire. And generally speaking, that's going to get you to the goal the quickest. So again, the scenario is going to buy those properties as quickly as possible. And then once it hits those rules, it's going to then stop buying and take all the monthly savings rate and all the rental property cash flow and then start picking one property with the smallest loan balance and take all the money and just snowball pay off loan one, then loan two, then loan three. And of course, every time one property is paid off, that extra cash flow is now rolled into snowballing the next debt pay down on the next property. Okay, so going into the scenario results. So before I actually go into these, I gotta say, I was surprised by some of these results. So this is where I'm gonna start showing some graphs from the real estate financial planning software. So check the show notes if you want to see them yourself. I will do my best to describe them so at least you get the punchline to understand, you know, what scenarios achieve those goals. But if you want to see the graphs yourself, go to the website. So it's graphing the four scenarios there in total cash flow, and it's got a line there for the monthly income we want. And so that monthly income is $5,000 a month. So that's the first goal we have. So I'm going to run all four of those scenarios and to see which one gets us the $5,000 a month goal first. Now, before I give you the drum roll and tell you, what is your guess as far as which one will get you that $5,000 a month goal first? Is it the refinance your primary and buy 5 rentals, refinance your primary buy 10 rentals, sell your primary, buy 5 rentals, or sell your primary and buy 10 rentals. So I expected the scenario of sell your primary, move once, and buy 5 rental properties to be the first scenario to achieve that $5,000 goal. I was wrong. That one actually came in second place. The one that came in first was sell your primary, move once, and then buy 10 rentals. So it was selling the properties, but actually buying 10 rentals instead of 5. Which was really interesting to me. So let me read off the results to you here. I'll read you the scenario name, how many years it took to get the result, and then the result of $5,000. And then the other neat thing that we programmed in here in the software, or that James in the software and I did in the scenario, is that, hey, $5,000 today is different than $5,000 in 10 years from now because of, you know what, inflation. So I program in 3% inflation because we don't want $5,000 in future inflated dollars. We want the equivalent to $5,000 today. So that's the way I always think about a retirement because it's much easier for myself and all my clients to conceptualize, yeah, you know, my expenses today are this, this, and this, and this, and this. Okay, so I need about $8,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 a month. So I think that's a lot easier to assume that going forward, in 10 years, you're going to have similar expenses and everything will have inflated. Now, some might inflate more, some might inflate less, but it's much easier to model and conceptualize versus trying to get all this time value money stuff. because that just gets really wonky and really hard to understand fast. All right. So I'm also going to read off to you the future inflated dollars. That's the equivalent to $5,000 when this scenario hits its goal of generating $5,000 a month. So the winner for $5,000 a month is sell your primary, move once, and then buy 10 rental properties. That will take 5.4 years. And at that time, it'll be $6,038 a month in income. The second best was sell your primary, move once, and buy 5 rental properties. That'll take 6.4 years. And the future equivalent will be $6,112. The third scenario is refinance your primary and buy 10 rentals. And that'll take 7.4 years. And that'll be at $6,364. And the fourth option, or the fourth scenario, is refinance your primary and buy 5 rentals. And that will take 9.2 years. And at that point, you'll need $7,263 a month in income. All right. So a couple of important numbers to note here on here. I've already talked about the inflation, but something else I use to calculate here is what we call total true cash flow. And this is what we kind of talked about in episode 1 on the 4 ways you make money in real estate, is that I'm assuming the cash flow you get plus the depreciation tax benefits, because it is cash flow at the end of the year. So we're trying to look at as holistically as possible to maximize that cash flow. So I'm reading these numbers here. That's not just your cash flow from the properties, but it's also taking into account your depreciation benefits. Now, whichever way we want to look at it, hey, you can do either way. You can say, great, I just want to get cash flow and depreciation will be kind of be my buffer. Or you might want to calculate it on, because, hey, if I got $5,000 a month of income coming in, that's all I need. I already got my buffer built in there. So it depends on how you want to slice and dice it. There's no right or wrong. The only important thing to know is to make sure you're looking at it the correct way. And yet, I would recommend you at least look at both of those types of returns, because they are cash now in your pocket and you can decide what to do on there. So those numbers I read you are what we call total true cash flow. And that is rent minus expenses, minus your mortgage payments. So that's your cash flow plus the tax benefits you get in there. And so I forget what tax bracket I put in there, but it calculates the, you know, depreciation of the property multiplied by a tax bracket. It does a really good job of calculating that out as well. So that and the inflation are the two things to keep in mind on that scenario. And the next one we're going to talk about here on $10,000 a month. All right. So hopefully I've not lost you yet. So just to recap on that before I move on, for that $5,000 a month, the scenario of sell your primary, move once, buy 10 rentals, that gets you there the quickest of 5.4 years and will be about just over $6,000 in money in 5.4 years. Okay, so now let's take those same scenarios, but now we're changing the goal from $5,000 a month to $10,000 a month, and let's see which one wins. So before I go into it, take a second and think about, take a guess, which one is going to win. Is it going to be the sell and buy 5 or 10 rentals, or the refinance and buy 5 or 10 rentals? Well, I can tell you off the bat, it's not going to be one of the two options with buying 5 rentals, because that just does not give you enough cash flow to achieve that goal of $10,000 a month. So I knew that starting out, so kind of set those two up for failure, but I thought that might be the quickest way to achieve that $5,000 a month goal. And then that would achieve that medium-term goal there for the clients, to where one spouse could, you know, retire or scale back. And at that point, their whole financial picture is going to change, and that might impact their savings rate. It might increase their savings rate. I'm not really quite sure. So that's why I want to build the 5 in there, because it might make sense. Because I actually assumed that buying the 5 rental properties would get you that goal the quickest, and that might be the better route for their, you know, personal goal of retiring one spouse early, and they could figure out the second phase getting a $10,000 a month. So that's the main reason I ran the 5 rental properties in there. So I was surprised that that one won. All right, so we know the 5 rental properties are not going to get you there. Now, the same two scenarios with the same concepts of, great, we'll take all the cash we're starting out with, our monthly savings rate, plus all the rental cash flow. We're going to buy properties once we have enough money in the account, and we're going to save, buy, save, buy, save, buy until we get to 10 properties. And then we go from savings and accumulation to taking all that money and doing a debt snowball pay down on each property. And all the money go towards one loan, and the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and so on until you hit the 10th. So same logic on here. Now we've just moved it from 5 to 10 rental properties. So the winner is, this did not surprise me here, it was selling the primary, moving once, and then buying 10 rental properties. And that would take 12.4 years. And that $10,000 in 12.4 years inflates to $14,500. Now, the second winner was refinance your primary, buy 10 rental properties, and it would take 14.25 years, and it'd be worth about $15,800. So really, it's going to take about 2 years longer by the refinance option versus the sell option to go out there and achieve that $10,000 a month goal. So this is where I want to take a break before I move on here and move on to the rest of these charts. We have to kind of take into some, start balancing out your investing goals, the fact that, hey, we are running models and they are not 100% correct, because reality happens and models are models. And also just with your investing versus your personal goals. So going out there to achieve $10,000 a month in income in rental properties, whether it takes 12 or 14 years, I would consider that to be a pretty good margin of error, regardless of just buying properties based off of life circumstances, market circumstances, bad times, good times to the market. Might be a little quicker, might be a little bit less. But, you know, assuming that it might take me 2 years difference, you know, 10, 12 years from now, that's not a huge number in my mind, especially when you're looking at, great, I have to move my family, buy a new house. Hey, is the chance of us retiring 2 years early or getting that goal 2 years early, is that worth all the hassle right now? Or is the place we live in, is that just a perfect place right now for our family and we and our kids growing up here? I can answer that question. You can answer that question. Or I say you can't answer that question, or I can't answer the question for my clients, just like they can answer that, they cannot answer that question for me or you. So this is where it kind of becomes more of a personal decision. What's the better route to do? But regardless, I can tell you, both of those routes are better than converting that property to a rental property or not pulling out any equity at all and just taking that $1,000 a month and $55,000 in capital. This gets them that goal much, much quicker. All right, so a couple more charts are in here, but those are going to be, I'm not looking at that. That's too much to cover in a podcast. Basically, it's just going into some very detailed nuances about the true cash flow and how they taper off after the 27.5 years. If you want to see them, go to the blog post. But from the high-level conceptual punchline that you can pull equity out to refinance or sell your properties, it's not going to have an impact on there. So I already kind of did the recap here as far as what gets you the quickest. To recap that, to get that $5,000 a month or that $10,000 a month goal, the best scenario is to sell, move once, and then plan on buying 10 properties before you go out there and do the debt pay down. So that's kind of what I'm inclined towards reading this. But what I wanted to do, and I did, is great. We ran all the scenarios. I sent it over to my clients. They reviewed it. We talked about it. And of course, what happens when we talk about it, we're like, oh yeah, well, what about this? Or actually, you know what? As we dove in and thought about stuff, this changed and that changed. And that's just the normal part of the process. Like, hardly anyone ever gets it right from the very, you know, first scenario on all the assumptions. Because as you start thinking about it, it's an exercise. You say, okay, well, we could do this or we could do this. And it kind of gets you thinking about what financial life adjustments you could do. So we make some updates in the second part of this plan. So that's the next episode, so episode 5 in the Investment Property Analysis Course series. So we make a couple updates on there. So what those updates are, and this is after I talk with the clients, is I'm using a lower cap rate rental property. So read, a more expensive property to be a little bit more conservative. They've actually are able to increase their monthly savings rate from $1,000 to $2,000 a month. Or I'm sorry, they can increase their monthly savings rate. And then we're actually going to run some scenarios again on doing some cash out refinances on their future rental properties. So this is kind of, this gets a little more fun on here because we look at taking the future properties they have and the future equity and then tapping in that equity to buy more rental properties. All right. So that wraps up for this episode. If you have questions, email me or leave them in the comments. I'll respond to either one. I would love to hear your feedback on if this was helpful, if it was confusing, because I want to do more episodes going into these deep financial models like this. But it's a little bit, you know, it's heavy data, so it's hard to communicate no matter what medium. And a lot of times since we're doing podcasts and talking or writing, I think it definitely makes it more challenging. So I always like to hear feedback and ask questions. So reach out to me. If you need help on this, you can always reach out to me. I'm always happy to help build scenarios and do some planning with my clients. If you're not my client, I can't really help you personally. I just don't have the time to do it. But definitely use this resource and all the other resources on the website in the series to get you more information, help you put together your plan. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.